sure it's taping all right. Okay. This is Bev Dirksen, and this afternoon I'm talking to Mr. Smith, who moved to Westboro when he was 13 years old in 1907. So, and Mr. Smith's going to tell us some of his recollections as far as a boy 13 moving to a new town and what he thought of the school that he started out in Westboro in.
Well, I had a hard job to get in for the eighth grade when I came to town. They wanted to put me back to the seventh grade. And I was stubborn and I wouldn't go back. And we had a superintendent here, Mr. Waldron, that was a wonderful man. He really was. And I talked with him and my folks talked with him, and finally they decided let me try the eighth grade. And I had already had in West Medway, where I came from, everything that was in this last half of the year in Westboro.
In the eighth grade, so yeah. Good thing they let you try it.
Well, it wasn't in a way, because it spoiled me for really settling down to study. So I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd all gone through it.
You didn't have to worry about the subjects. You
no.
had a lot of time left to fool.
I did. And the teacher in West Medway told me not to go back. And she says, if it comes to it, I'll come up to Westboro and talk to them myself. She would have, too.
Which that's something.
She would have.
There.
We had some nice teachers here.
And her name, you said, was Rosie
O'Grady. Rosie O'Grady. Yeah, and we used to sing it on the street, you know. She never minded it. Even when she heard it, she never minded it. But it was the year that song came out, if I remember correctly. And everybody was singing it, you know. But she was... She was really a nice teacher. But we had some good teachers here that I went to.
Any in particular that you really liked?
Oh, yes. Yes. Miss Haven, Patty Haven. She was the teacher in the ninth grade. And the teacher in the eighth grade was a very old lady. She used to fall asleep. In the afternoon, about 2 o'clock.
Do you remember her name? Or would you rather not say?
Her name was Crowell. I can't remember her first name. But she would go to sleep with her eyes on one side of the room and wake up with her eyes on the other side of the room. So we had to watch our step. But Miss Haven was a very nice type of teacher. She didn't get away with anything, and yet she didn't pick on anybody. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just the same.
So.
Whether you had real well-to-do parents or whether you didn't, made no difference to her. And I also had Mr. Walden at the same time in bookkeeping, which I started to take up when I finished the whole thing. He used to come over there in the afternoon and take a bookkeeping class. There were only about, I think there were 8 of us in the class. And you know, you would learn
with
from
him.
Men like that. Because he, I don't know, he just had a way about him that you couldn't help but learn something
mm-hmm.
from him.
What do you think about the schools today? Do you think they're harder, that the children work harder, or do you think that they are a lot easier?
I really think, my own opinion probably isn't worth a dime, but I do not think that the kids are taught the way they used to be taught. The discipline in school today, from what I've heard about it, and is so different than what it used to be. The teachers used to have a good sized class, but they had discipline.
Do you have any idea about how many would be in a class?
Oh, yes, it'd be anywhere from 32 to 40 in different classes, certain classes. Some would be, well, I don't think there was any smaller than 30. But the teacher had discipline. Because you didn't dare, the average fellow, or girl either, didn't want anything going home, because they knew what they'd get when they got home.
I think, and maybe that's the key to it.
I think so.
I think, you know, today because a lot of them don't care what goes home.
No, they don't. And the parents don't seem to care either. From what I hear from my grandchildren and things, you know. But they push them too fast.
Yeah, I agree with you in
I don't think they have a ninth grade anymore, do they?
No, they have eighth grade and then they go to high school,
yeah,
first year of high school.
But they used to have a ninth grade. Mm-hmm. And you had to pass a good examination to get into high school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got into high school, but I didn't finish. I had to leave, I did leave my first year of high school. My folks were... My father was laid up, and I just got out and went to work. Felt that I had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I guess that happened quite a bit.
Oh, in the old days,
back
then. Because men didn't make any money to speak of. I don't care what job he had. He was a stitcher in a shoe factory, and he made what was made in a shoe factory, probably anywhere from, well, they averaged, I guess, from $12 to $18 a week. And raising a family, they didn't get very far. You know?
And if they were sick and out of work, I don't imagine they had all the compensation and
didn't have any.
Blue Cross and everything else that we rely on today.
No, a person was lucky that had any insurance. It cost so much to get. But...
What was your first job?
Well, my first job was working for a plumber and steam fitter. And he also had a machine shop right downtown where, what's in there now? McClellan. Is it McClellan? Rug and stuff, I think. Right on Milk Street, right there.
Oh, yes, yes, I know the rug place there.
McClellan. And down in the cellar, they've got a, I don't know, eating place of some kind. I think down the cellar of it.
That, like, backs up to the pub, which is on the other side of the street?
The pub is on that side of the street. That's the building.
It goes right through. That's right. Yeah.
It goes right through.
Sorry.
And I worked in there and did all the delivery work with the team, the horse and all the plumbing stuff and kerosene, things of that sort that they carried.
With a horse, would that be with a wagon?
Oh yeah, horse and a wagon.
Wagon behind the horse.
Yeah. And I worked there for, I don't know, a year and a half, I guess, for him. And he went under, so he couldn't pay my $6 a week that I got from 7 to 7, or not 7 to 7, 7 to 6, and then Saturday nights till 9. So I had to go somewhere else, pick up another job, which I did. I went to Hunt Manufacturing that made metal Connorsbead. And they were on East Main Street under tape factory that was there at that time.
Now they made what?
Metal Connorsbead.
I don't know what that is.
No, I believe it. Well, it's a a metal beading that when they're building houses, they used to put along the edge and to put the plaster up to it and across. And there was a metal beading that went the height of each room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they plastered right.
Right
to
up
it.
To that.
Yeah, the hole. And then I left that and I went to Boston to work when I was 16. In S.S. Pierce Grocery Department.
Did you live in Boston?
No, I lived up here on Faye Street at that time.
And how did you get to Boston every day? By train?
Every morning. Catch the train at 6 or 6:10, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd get into Boston 20 minutes of 8, and rush up to Tremont and Beacon Street where the S.S. Pierce was, where we were, and I worked there. And I worked there until 6 o'clock at night. Then rushed to the South Station to Mont.
And which got you back around what? 9?
Well, around 7:30. 7:30, 35. Around there. And you know, in those days, for $30, I think it was $27 to start with, to get a 3 months ticket. Back and forth.
Back and forth,
yeah.
Both ways,
yeah.
For 3 months.
3 months. And I did that for quite a while after my father died. And he died when I was 16. And I worked there until 1919 in the cigar department. They shifted me because I was getting out early to catch my train home. And I was going in late because my train didn't get in until 20 minutes of 8.
Oh,
I should have been at 7:30. So they shifted me to the cigar department and wanted to know if I smoked. And I said, the superintendent of the store, and I said, well, yes, I do some. I didn't at the time much. Occasionally I might, but not much. Well, he says, I don't want you to get any bad habits, but as long as you do smoke, I can put you in the cigar department. So I worked there until 1919.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got out of service, I couldn't take it in the store. I was in the service for about 9 months. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I couldn't take it in the store, so I went looking for another job. Well, I went to Worcester. I went to work in Worcester. The automobile concern up there. And I worked there for them until 1930. Yeah, 1930 I worked for them. And then everything fell apart. Real depression.
Yeah.
29.
That's really bad.
Oh, it was wicked. You couldn't give an automobile away. You couldn't sell them, you couldn't give them away. So I came back down to Westboro. Well, I was only in Fitchburg about a year anyway. My folks still lived here, my family still lived here, and I went back and forth Saturdays, Monday, Sunday night late, or Monday morning, you know, either way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I poked around and I finally picked up a job driving a bus.
Here in Westboro?
In Westboro. The fellows wanted to go on a vacation and they hadn't had any. So I got a job to fill in. And I worked for them for 29 years, a little over. Then I quit altogether.
So.
59.
Well, you certainly had a variety of,
oh, yeah,
of jobs, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to, the average kid in those days wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he was forced to or not, what I mean, whether his parents needed it or not, mm-hmm. he still wanted to work. And you would work.
And you'd keep looking until you found a
something
job.
That was appeal to you, maybe, but you'd take something until that came along. Today, they don't. They got out of school. If they get out of high school, they want anywhere from $3 to $5 an hour to go to work. College kid today, if he's lucky, he can get a pretty good job. But those jobs weren't around in those days.
And a lot of them are finding it very difficult now. All of a sudden, the job market that was so
it just fell flat.
Big,
yes. So the kid that would take anything come along, still had a little change in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And
a foot in the door towards a better job, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because quite often you have to take a job that you don't like.
Oh, sure.
In order
take
to build
anything
up to something.
Eat.
Sure.
Most of us in those days used to like to eat, and we did eat. Not fancy foods, but real good
mm-hmm.
food.
And you had to work just to get them.
Oh, yes.
Just to get the food.
Yeah, I think that people laugh at me a lot of times. Wonder how I, look so good or feel so good.
I know, you do, you look great.
And I say, I ate plenty of good plain food. Oh, I eat fancy stuff too, but good plain food.
Most of the
time.
Yeah.
It's all you had.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said that outdoor work is the best thing in the world to do. The healthiest thing to do. Because I've worked mostly outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in the shop a little bit. I disliked it very much. And the people that I have seen and that I knew well, they went into shops. When they retired, they were done in 2 years, 3 years.
So, I'm sure you have a lot there.
I really believe it. And of course, these other jobs are necessary, but they push people.
Yeah, and it's kind of too bad that even people with jobs that they have to be inside, even when they can be outside, when they get home from work at night and so forth, they're, still inside. So
yeah.
That's kind of too bad.
But they're pushed. They started that, they had piecemeal years ago, in the shoe shop and in the hat shop. Was piecemeal. And men would kill themselves to make an extra dollar, Then, when they got to making too much money, they cut down the price of the piecework. So it didn't do any good. If they had done a steady job, done so much, and be happy with it, they'd still be better off.
They'd be better off.
Yeah. And I never liked piecemeal. And, I still don't like it, I don't think. If a fellow will go out and do a decent day's work,
for a decent
the
day's
average
pay.
Man will be happy with it. But they started pushing, and they got it all upset inside. They get ulcers, and they get various other things because of the nervous system. What's the use?
That's it. No, I know ulcers have become really...
I worked for one man, told me one time, he says, I can't push you. I says, no, you can't. I said, I'll do you a good day's work. If you're not satisfied, tell me so, and I'll get out. But I said, you're not going to push me. And I worked long hours for that man, too, in the automobile business, when I first went to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
We put in some long hours. We'd sell a man a truck, and I'd have to go out and teach him to drive it. Well, up to a milk truck, they started peddling milk at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd work all day, take the truck up to him, back up him, load up with milk, go with him while he went around his route, come back at 7 o'clock in the morning,
come back to work again.
You can't get people to do that today.
No.
They just won't do it. When it says 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 3, whatever it is, they're out the door. They don't do those things. And you didn't get any money extra for it either. But you had a job and you liked the job, you know, you liked what you were doing. And you did it. But I taught a lot of
people. Well, you must have been a good person to have worked for you.
Well, I don't know about that, but I never had any trouble with my bosses. Never.
Well, with that attitude, I can see why you shouldn't have ever had any trouble.
I never had any trouble with it. Oh, we used to have an argument once in a while. I didn't always win, but sometimes I did. But,
do you remember anything where you went to work so young? Do you remember anything that your family used to do for recreation or for fun?
Yeah, picnics.
Picnics. Everyone picnics. Remembers the picnics.
Yeah, we used to have picnics. We, from Westboro here, you go down Lake Chauncey, they had a big pavilion for dancing, and they had canoes, rowboats, they had a little lunch place, and they finally put in a bowling alley.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Oh,
down
yeah.
there at Lake Chauncey?
Oh, yes. And they had a theater. That's where I saw my first movies, I guess, was down there.
Down Lake Chauncey.
Lake Chauncey, yeah.
I knew they had the pavilion and the dancing.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about the bowling alley or the theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was after a few years they put in the bowling alley. But the theater sat. I don't know if you know that road down there or not, but from the beach. Now, is the first driveway that went up toward the pavilion and the lunchroom. And then you go along a little ways, there's another driveway.
Yeah.
Well, right opposite that driveway was where the trolley tracks ran, went to Marlboro. That's how you travel back and forth, was either walk or go on the trolley. And there was a switch there also. There were two cars would come down there and pick up the people Saturday night. And one come from Marlboro, and then one from Worcester would go down, pick them up, and bring them back. And if it's at that driveway where the little theater run up in there. And of course, there weren't talkies then, there were silent pictures, uh-huh. You know. And we used to like to go down and see that. And he also had field days, a real field day,
mm-hmm.
at Lake Chauncey, with races and different kinds of sports, because that field was well taken care of between the brick building that's there now, the booze joint, mm-hmm. and the road. That building that was taken care of, and it was in good shape. And they had a race from the center of town down to Chauncey.
A running race.
Running. Yeah. And you know, those days used to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They really were.
They sound it. Well, I wish we were back there.
Well, I think that kids today have too much. If we had 50 cents, we thought we were rich going down to Johnson.
And you probably were compared to a lot of others.
It didn't cost us much to get into the theater. I've forgotten what it was, a dime, I think. And you'd get a sandwich for a nickel, some kind of a sandwich, a bottle of tonic, and well, then we were happy to have it.
So for 50 cents, you could almost have taken a date.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we walked down, particularly, it's just to save the extra nickel or dime
yeah.
to ride down, you know. But No, I really think that those were nice days. A lot of things got grown up and built up, and men got better jobs. Well, my kids aren't going to go through what I did. They should have. They should have, really.
A lot of them would be better off far.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, you take your school here. How many kids go by here with automobiles that cost $3,000 to $4,000, for gosh sake, going to school? Kids that are 16, 17 years old.
I know. A lot of them drive better cars than I do.
Well, I believe it.
Sure.
I believe it. No, there's a... Well, 4th of July, we used to have horribles. And that was
sounds interesting. What was that?
Well, you'd get things rigged up in the morning early. Maybe by 4 o'clock they'd start off with a horse and a wagon with some metal drums on it. And they'd belt those things, you know, make a lot of racket. They'd have firecrackers and stuff. And then there'd be somebody come along with a few old horns, and they'd be trying to play a band, or have a band, and things of that sort that really...
Anybody could get into that wanted to.
And it was a lot of fun. Sometimes they'd go along with these, one time particularly, a couple of years they had a horse pulling a farm wagon with drums, like these oil drums, you see, filled with water and hand pumps in the drums. And they'd spray the people as they were going along. Somebody'd be pumping the thing, you know, and they'd spray the people on the sidewalk. And nobody ever got sore or anything, you know. They expected those things to happen, and they really had a lot of...
A little surprised, maybe, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would be surprised some,
yeah,
once in a while, because they wouldn't see it coming, you know, and next thing you know, you were covered with water.
Those kind of things were fun, and they didn't destroy anyone's property.
No.
And
oh, no. So. Oh. Even Halloween, they used to take gates off once in a while, but no destroying. They'd pick the gates off and take them down to the next door neighbor and leave them.
Mm-hmm.
But no destroying.
You just have to go and collect it in the morning.
Yeah, but nowadays they'll destroy anything. Oh, Lord. It's disheartening, really.
You said you were in the Army for a short time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anything you particularly remember about that? Did you like it or hate it? Or
well, I'll tell you. I was a funny guy, I guess, because I wasn't homesick. Because I had been working in different places, mm-hmm, you know. And I never got homesick. But the only thing that I really remember was the flu. Boy, that was something.
When that went through,
it was terrible.
There were an awful lot of deaths from that.
Oh, tremendous amount. And I had some pretty good friends that I lost, that I had made up in camp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wasn't taken for a long while, I couldn't enlist; they wouldn't take me. And I fought with them in Boston. I was working at S.S. Pierce's at the time. But I tell you why they wouldn't take me. I had a false upper plate.
Is that
16 years old, yeah. And they wouldn't take it. They said, no, well, you've got to have all your own teeth. We can fix them, but you've got to have them. So I argued and fought with them a long time. But the big shots, they used to come in by cigars. And I knew some of the big shots down there in Boston. No, this can't do it. I says, if you were on the field and you get your teeth shot out, what are they going to do with you? Oh, well, that's different. I said, no, not a bit.
You'd
I couldn't
still be.
See it. And finally I got a notice. They had oh, what did they call it? Anyway, I wasn't supposed to go overseas. We went. That were taken at that time. But we were headed for overseas when I, before I got out, we were on our way when they stopped us in Philadelphia and sent us down to New Jersey, a bunch of us. Because that's where I got out, was in New Jersey. But I couldn't see the difference, and they didn't take it that way. But so I wasn't in too long. But the worst thing that I remember, as I say, was the flu, and boy, I was sick with that. So were thousands of others.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible. Okay. But I got over mine in a very short time. They shipped me, I was in New York, just outside of Syracuse at the time. And then they sent us to, they took me to Syracuse, a hospital, Good Shepherd Hospital. And a bunch of us were in there. Tell you what we used to do. Another fellow and I, a fellow from Rhode Island. And we were side by side. The nurse had come along. There was only four nurses up there at that time to take care of us. And they come around with CC pills. Have to take them. We'd take them, put them on our tongue. When the nurse would go along, they had these high windows. It was a teaching room, school room actually, in the hospital. And they had these high windows, like these church windows that run way up, you know. And they had them open at the top. And we were under one of those windows. And after the nurse had gone down the way, we'd take the pill out, see if we could throw it outdoors. Well, that went along for, oh, several days. But they all didn't go outdoors, and she stepped on two or three of them. Boy, did we catch them. They were good nurses. Awful good nurses. And then I went up to Oswego to supposed to be well, I was too sick for the hospital, and wasn't well enough to go to the back into service at the time. And they sent us up to Oswego. And it was cold and blazing up there. And I got along all fine up there, you know, and I got over it. I wouldn't take my clothes off for the nurses. I'd sleep at night, but in the morning I'd get up before they came on, put my clothes back on again. And we had quite a time over that. And I went out one day, went up, there was an old fort up to Oswego, looked over the lake. I went up there one day, and oh, it was cold, and the wind blowing, but I had on my overcoat way down on my, almost my ankles, heavy, heavy overcoat. I came back, and see, I looked in, and I saw the man that had charge of the hospital, and a lieutenant, the first lieutenant. And I listened at the window, and the lieutenant, the nurse, told him the story. She says, I can't do anything with him. He just goes out every day. And I did. I went out every day to get the fresh air. Oh, there was 29 fellas in there that were sick of dogs, a lot of them. So I went out. Finally, I said, I guess I better go in. Well, I went around, left the window, and I walked in, you know. The lieutenant lit on me like a ton of brick. Well, the old captain, it's an old-time doctor. He said, wait a minute. He said, I want to talk to him. He says, come on, come out here a minute. So we went out, and he asked me the story, and I told him. And I said, gee, I says, I just can't take it in there. I said, there's a bunch of us that shouldn't be in there now. The others are too sick, and we should be able to get out and get the fresh air. Well, we walked, oh, from here, way up here to Myrtle Street and back again. talking all the time, asking me questions. Well, he says, I'm going to see what I can do. So the next day he came down and he said, you get me the names of the ones you think should be out, capable of being out. And he said, I'll see what I can do with them. So I did. And I got a bunch of names. In fact, I got 27 altogether of the fellows, talked to them. I knew them because I'd been with them for a week or more. And I told him about it. He says, all right, you go get their clothes. And he says, I'll be down tomorrow morning and we'll move you someplace. Well, I did quite a job persuading the whoever had my clothes to get them, but I got them. I told him that he sent me for them, and he called him up, and he told him finally that I was to take them. We got them all dressed up, and he came down and he took us up to a brand new barracks, quite a ways away, and a big pot-bellied stove in each end of it. And he put a sergeant in charge. There was a sergeant there and a couple of corporals. Now he said, if you fellows will do what we want you to do, keep warm, stay in here, keep those fires going, he says, I will leave you here until I come back in a few days. Which was fine with us, because we tickled to death to get out of the other
place.
Yeah,
I guess.
And we kept it up. But the bakery wasn't too far away from where he put us. And we had a little fellow there, very short lad, small, funny little fellow. And we used to send him down to the bake shop to get some fresh donuts and pies. In fact, pies were mostly what we were eating, you know. So went along for, we were there a week, just about a week. And all of a sudden in the front door come this lieutenant. And he was mad. He didn't know what we were doing up there, how we got there, or anything else. The general never told him. The captain of the thing never told him. So he come wandering in. He says, you wait a minute. He says, I know all about it. He says, I put him up here. Well, I quieted him down, you know. And we had sent this little lad out to get some pies, fresh hot pies. And he went out and got them, and he come back, and here he had two hands with pies in them. And he didn't know that the officers were there.
The others were there.
So he began kicking the door. I'm over here, another lad over there, and two officers standing here. And the old man says, what's that? I said, someone wants to come in. Well, he says, let him in. Excuse me, which I did. I opened the reach over and I opened the door. And he come in, and you know, he almost dropped those pies. he was so, and he just stood there. Mouth open, you know, scared stiff. Well, the old man looked at him, and he began to laugh. Well, he says, you know, he says, I guess the two fellas are in pretty good shape. You can go back to camp. So 2 days later, they shipped us back.
Off he went.
But that and the flu, boy, that flu, honest, that was awful.
I can remember reading about that.
I stayed up one night. We had a cook there that got it. And he was as red as that, all over. Mm. And as I say, we only had four nurses and male orderlies. They brought them up from down south to take care of us. And they were scared stiff, and they were getting it gradually. And I stayed up one night, all night long, bathing that fellow with alcohol. And as fast as I'd fill my hand and put it on him, my hand would be as dry and parched as could be. He was so hot.
Oh, I Did he make it?
No.
No, he didn't?
No, he finally lost out. But we tried to take care of him, you know, keep him going. He's an awful nice fellow. And a good cook, too. That was awful thing.
Mm. Is there anything that you notice a big change as far as the downtown area here in Westboro? Anything that you...
Well, the main thing is the square itself. That's about the only thing that's been changed much. As far as the stores are concerned, it has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one or two new ones there. But the big brick block where the Guarantee Bank is was there. And that went down a ways. There's another new building down below where the 5 and 10 is, and where the drugstore is now. That used to be up on the middle way of that block. The town pharmacy there.
Town pharmacy.
Yeah. And the one over there on South Street, Boys, is just the same. Been there for...
Been there a long
time. Since I can remember, since 1907 when I came to town, run by two or three different people, but it was always there. And the other one was run by a man named Buxton. And there used to be a post office in the corner of the alley where the Guarantee Bank Trust is. Post office used to be in there. Where the savings bank is, used to be a grocery store. Across the street, that block is very near the same, except it's been changed. The front, it's been changed a little, but there used to be a market there, a hardware store, where there is one now, and there used to be a shoe store just this side and the other side of that, and then there was a market in there. And the big shop was on the corner of the alley that goes in toward the parking lot in back of the town hall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The,
I know that alley that goes by the police.
Yeah, there's a, there's a realtor got a corner store there now. There used to be one there then, in that corner, and then the big shop. And,
we don't have any bake shop in the center now.
No.
No.
No. But you can get anything there. And really good. Wagner. Gus Wagner run that bake shop. And he used to go out with a wagon and run around with a auction team. Had a bakery stuff. In fact, his son lives up on West Street. He's the only one living. The son is up on West Street now. And he works at the newsroom sometimes, early in the morning and late at night.
So even in those days, people would buy baked goods from the store.
The reason they did that was so many women worked in the boot shop, the underwear factory, which was up above it. That was on Milk Street, just beyond where the fire barn is a little. There's a factory there now. But there was a boot shop there, and behind it was a hat shop. And they'd come down around the corner, they'd go into the newsroom, which was about where the door is to the Guarantee Bank of Trust, pick up a paper, go right across to the bake shop, across the street, then go home.
Pick up the bakeries?
Yeah, or else in the market. There was a market right there on the other corner of that alley. There was a market and grocery store.
So they could stop there too?
Yeah. And then below that a little bit was a fish market. So you could stop in and get fresh fish. It'd come every day.
Now, wouldn't that be great, huh?
Yeah. It was.
It'd be nice.
It was a nice little town. And then McDonald's.